There was active imperial patronage in the 11th century. Constantine the Ninth, that worthless husband of Zoe in so many ways, to his credit, in 1047, probably reorganized the imperial school of law and philosophy, and in some way was seen as almost the possible architect of a Byzantine equivalent of a Western-style university. Intellects such as Zephalinus, the fellow who wrote the Epitomes and the Scholia, Michael Psellus, presided over these imperial schools, something of a dean or a master. They certainly were not quite sure what their title was, the Master of Letters. And in some ways, their intellectual pursuits seemed to be leading Byzantine education in the capital down the line to the organization of a university. Unfortunately, it never happened. And that is one of the curious issues about the 12th century in Constantinople. Why was it that all of this surge in literary production going back into the 11th century, but particularly in the 12th century, never produced the kind of university you see emerging at Paris, where intellectual pursuits were there for their own reasons? You studied philosophy for its own virtue and value. Where the university comes to detach itself from direct control by ecclesiastical and royal authorities and moves towards Western notions of what we have as a university today. And part of that was that the fiscal and political compromises of the Comnenian emperors meant patronage was sporadic, that it was not at the level it could have been. The universities in Constantinople never had the kind of independent endowments that allowed them to emerge as in Western universities. Part of it was a changing intellectual climate, which is detected already in the reign of Alexis I and becomes particularly pronounced by the reign of Manuel I. There's a famous trial for heresy in 1082 against a fellow named John Attalus, who's actually descended from a immigrant from southern Italy, Norman Italy, who is a great and powerful thinker and interpreter of Plato. His religious views were held to be heretical. He was put on trial twice, once in 1077 when he was acquitted, again in 1082. He's condemned for heresy. Anna gives us a detailed account. And by one account, from 1077 to 1157, there's no less than 25 known trials against intellectuals for holding heretical views. And if you work that out, that's like one heresy trial every 3 years, and they tend to bunch up, particularly in the reign of Manuel, which is rather curious. An emperor interested in astrology, why would he be interested in presiding or allowing such trials to go on? And part of that is, as the 12th century progresses, the Byzantine emperors became more and more convinced that they were the representatives of the Orthodox tradition. There were negotiations of reunion with Rome. There were contact with Western Europeans. And the Orthodox tradition became more and more crystallized, in some ways more and more hardened. There were intellectual arguments advanced on behalf of Constantinople's position. And so it's a combination of imperial patronage, finances, as well as intellectual climate, and Constantinople never really achieves a true university in the Western tradition, which is still a puzzling question for many Byzantinists. On the other hand, the Comnenian emperors were quite lavish in their patronage to visual arts. Alexis I, and especially his sons John II and Manuel, initiate an extremely ambitious building program in Constantinople. When we get to the Fourth Crusade, the Fourth Crusaders, when they gaze upon the city of Constantinople, they are looking particularly at the building that has gone on at what is today known as the 4th, 5th, and 6th Hills. That is the northern sections of the city overlooking the Golden Horn. The Golden Horn is that river flowing out of Thrace that bounds the northern part of the city, and Constantinople is essentially a triangle. On those hills, which were not particularly impressive before the 12th century, the Comnenian emperors and the imperial aristocrats built a series of churches. Many of them only survive in foundations. Some are now mosques, as well as palaces and private residences that shifted the focus, the architectural focus of the city, away from its eastern tip, the so-called Old Core, where Hagia Sophia is from the time of Justinian, the old civic center, to that northern district. And the churches and residences built there were nothing short of spectacular.